Schneider.
Hello.
Eric.
Hello.
Hello.
Morning.
Hi.
Can we use the seat for Lawrence?
Sure, I'll wait outside.
No.
We got one right here.
Yeah.
You split the difference?
Yeah. I'll
set the corner then.
All right, wherever you
want.
That's our own boy.
So before we start, would you guys mind just introducing yourselves so
yeah.
you have the voice?
Right. I'm Eric Heiserer, writer-producer.
Lawrence Gray, producer.
You sick motherfuckers.
How long did it take you to go from this short to making a feature?
I will say, first of all, I'll say record time, right?
Record time.
I think to make a for movie from conception to in the can with the best people in the business, this is the fastest I've ever seen it. So this was, we had a movie from the time we all got together and said, let's make a Lights Out movie, a year.
A year.
Yeah. Wow, that never happens.
That does seem like still a long time.
So now you're spoiled for the next thing. I'll be in development for 3 years.
The use of light in this movie, we were just talking about it, is amazing. I think the best I've ever seen in a horror film, so congratulations on that. But the thing that we were talking about, and I almost wish there was a little bit more of it, is the use of devices.
Yeah.
Car, cell phone.
Yeah.
And I think they actually served as some of the highlights in both suspense and hilarious moments. So how did you guys come up with this idea? Did you think about going even further with it by like, oh, a laptop screen or a tablet?
We had, well, like David had, to his credit, he had a whole like laundry list of like, these are the devices we can use. This is the stuff that we can play with. These are all the things that I'd love to see integrated into the script at some point in time. And I had basically that taped to my monitor as I worked on the first draft to find any time I needed something, I'd get over there. I guess the two new things that I got introduced that I got to sneak in there that weren't on that list were the motion activated lights that I needed early on, and which always creeped me out. And that came out was like I had like a dinner at some restaurant somewhere, and you go to the restroom,
yes.
and they had that. Where I'm like, I'm still peeing. Come on, why is it dark? So, and then the thing that I will be most proud of was the headlights was my invention, and to see how happy that made David made my whole career.
Why a Volvo?
I didn't pick the car.
I mean,
the director is Swedish.
You see this guy, right? You think, oh, rainbow bar grill, like on Sunset. You wouldn't expect him to drive a Volvo.
Well,
a Chevelle.
Part of what's interesting about the movie is that there are layers to the characters that are not obvious, and
yeah.
that character, you know, actually comes from. Sort of upper middle class family, actually has somewhat, as Eric sort of described in a moment, sort of the soul of an accountant, like a very responsible, nurturing kind of character, even though he's trying to be a little bit more of the character that he pretends to be, that you sort of reference, like rock and roll clothing,
yeah.
kind of badass.
Metal fan.
Sort of
so
lot,
he's a
lot
hipster.
Of swagger.
Hey, hey, hey.
Now, what would be a layer for Maria Bello's character that we don't know about?
Oh, I would say that for her, I would say the layer for me about for Sophie is that she's a sci-fi fan. Yeah.
And what does that do for her then? That makes her accept what's
going on? It makes her open to possibilities that other people wouldn't consider. And of course, that means also that you can lean farther into conspiracy theories if you go down that road too much.
Okay.
She talked about how great it was to have scenes in which you didn't have to have so much of a backstory, that those scenes were defining itself. As you guys were writing the story, did you guys think about, like, okay, what is, you know, let's say to yourself, how do we get from point A to point B or point A to point C without talking about B?
It was a constant battle, I can tell you, especially because, like, when I grew up, the things that scared me most were... monsters or villains out of Twilight Zone episodes, The Outer Limits, and things that weren't so cut and dry as this is a demon or this is a ghost. And I really wanted Diana to live in that space because we haven't had something like that in a long, long time. But that meant that you'd have to create a lot of mythology to try and at least touch on the fact that she's unusual. And it was a give and take throughout. And thankfully, Lawrence... David and James all helped contribute to that discussion to make sure that we never said too much and we left questions in audiences' minds. You know, when we did that, we tried to do that on purpose. And that's where we ended.
Is Sophie the name that you gave her a reference to the Styron, Sophie's Choice?
David named her, so that's a question for him. I don't know where the game comes from.
This is a question for you, thanks to that guy over there. So Billy Burke is either your Drew Barrymore or your Janet Leigh, right?
Yeah.
Guys. You got the Twilight guy to suck everybody in, then you rub him out.
Yeah, look, here's the guy. You love it.
See,
now,
guys are sick.
Now, in the film, there's this sense of dread the whole time, and then, as I don't know if you've seen it with an audience, but the Friday audience... We were almost mad that these people are going to, you know, investigate what's in the dark. Was that, you know, did you
never go down the basement?
Yeah, did you intentionally do that? Because I mean, it got the audience like, oh come on, like, you know, like very interactive, and it was fun because we were all like almost talking to each other, like, really, you're gonna go down there?
Well, we needed.
Haven't you seen Psycho?
Right. We realized we needed one or two of those moments. We tried to be as spare as possible in that because it's something that we all like. We try to make the characters as smart as possible. At every time, but we knew we needed one or two of those moments in order to make the survivability of Brett such a revelation, because we discovered that when people weren't doing anything remotely like a little cringeworthy for audience members, that when you got to Brett, audiences were like, "What's he gonna do?" But when you put a little bit of like, "Oh, she goes into the basement now." The audience that I showed up late to a screening, so I didn't get to sit next to him. I sat next to two other just regular audience members, and as soon as Brett is stalked by Diana, the woman next to me said, "Oh, he did. He did."
That's what we said on the screening too. Everybody was like, "Well, bye, see ya." Later.
What we didn't want to do was give the supporting make the supporting character somebody who makes all the bad decisions, who gets them all in trouble, and so part of sort of modulating that, as Eric's talking about, was making it the principal characters, creating a still pretty compelling reason for them to do it, and then ultimately having them be smart enough to subvert the danger that they're getting into. So you know, part of making these movies that's so interesting is sometimes the audience laughs, and you're like, are they laughing at me? Are they laughing at my movie? Are they laughing at our characters? But no, people, you need cathartic moments. You need moments that drag you into theater. You're going, I can't believe they're doing that. I can't believe they said or did that. And because it's so intense for so long in the movie. Mm-hmm. So I think we found a really good middle ground of giving the audience those little oases in the middle of... or torturing them.
You have two things where you don't show the dead cops, the two that are presumably killed, and also we hear the ghost say, I'm going to kill you like they did your dad or whatever. So we know, but we never see him in the basement, which we expect. Was that intentional?
Yeah, again, I feel like the more you leave it to your audience's imagination, the better, because that's going to be a lot worse than whatever we can present, and it doesn't. It's not that we were aiming for a certain rating. We were just looking to like be as economical as possible. That's the other thing that
and as, and as elegant as possible.
Yeah.
Right? There's a different version of Lights Out where you've met the stepfather, you've seen the backstory. It's all spelled out for you. And Eric, you know, was really like. You know, there were conversations. Eric said, "What? Why? The movie's not about any of that.
No.
It's just context to what's informing Rebecca's choices in the movie." So I think, again, kind of a more innovative way to do it and but turned out to be a much more elegant way to do it.
Well, speaking to that point, a lot of times when a concept gets expanded from a short film to a feature-length film, a lot of times people do throw in a lot of thrillers, but... Yours was really lean and mean, and I liked the dramatic story just as much as the supernatural story.
Oh, good.
So I guess did you have to maybe sort of reverse engineer that? Do you have to create like the foundation of the dramatic story first and then put the supernatural in?
Yeah, I just mentioned that like 5 minutes ago. When I did the first draft of this script, it was 70 pages long, and it was just the drama. It was just the character relationships, and it was showing how everyone evolved and what their arc was. And how Rebecca and everybody else were in a different place than when they started.
Well, there was a moment where we had the horror stuff in earlier, and then we took it all out,
and just looked at the dramatic stuff after, which was an interesting scientific experiment, and did all that stuff hold up. And we did find some stuff that, you know, you could watch Lights Out with no horror, and it would be a
no ghosts, no
thrills, and it's a really compelling family drama about a family dealing with mental illness in their family. And we wanted the movie to have that level of dramatic credibility in it, and not be an exploitation movie, to be something that's really, really good.
The character of Diana is so interesting to me, because it has enough detail to it where you're kind of like, oh, I'll accept it. But you, I love that you guys didn't try to over-explain it, because I feel like that's one of the things that horror films try to do, is like, they either don't explain anything at all, or they over-explain it to death, where you're like, that makes no sense. So I love the fact, like you were just saying, that just enough of the story just to get it.
Right.
So that's more of a compliment than anything else.
Thank you. No, but this is really, as I say, I said in this interview, it really was Eric's Waterloo from the beginning of this, to not over-explain Diana. And there is, when you're telling a story, there's going to be a lot of expectation from the people developing it, from the studio, from producers, from everyone around. Oh, I don't fully understand that. And Eric really was really, really important, Eric, from the beginning. And then it became the mantra for the whole movie, for David and James and I and everyone else, to leave a lot to the audience's imagination, to tell just enough that you have questions in your mind, but you've been given enough back that you're satisfied by what you're telling, and then we have lots left open potentially further.
At the beginning, Rebecca really seems to be taking the traditional male role. We've just had sex, now get out of here. And it's very funny in a way. It's an introduction to this, to what's going on in the movie, and her character, to present her like that. Where'd you come up with that idea?
Well, it's taking from, you know, both family members and friends that I and other people know, when they've come from a very traumatic childhood, a lot of them have commitment issues. Like, if they've had to survive something, it's easier for them to not make any ties to anybody else, because that comfort is typically, for them, a warning sign that something terrible is going to happen later. So her reluctance to have a relationship with Brett all kind of, like, is born out of that that early childhood, like, something in the closet will kill me if I'm not careful.
There's a comment where she says, well, you're the only one I've been dating. Was that important to set up the fact that she's not, you know, promiscuous, that it's just...
Exactly. It's not that. Right, we didn't want to give people... and that's something that Teresa brought. She was like, look, I don't want to make it sound like, you know, I'm just, like, he's guy number 12. and that's a good point, but at the same time, it's obviously at that point snuck up on her how often she's been with Brad and how he's kind of like...
Yeah, because it was up to that line where I thought, oh, she's promiscuous. When she said that, I was like, oh, okay. She's that. Which I thought was really good to set up, because you don't... You know, horror movies, those kind of characters always die.
Yeah.
Yes, it's true.
And how much with the Child Protective Services stuff, did you have to do research to find out what would actually happen when we get that little speech about...
Yeah.
Where she says, you have to do two things, then you have to go in court, and then you've got to prove your own con.
I had two long launches with Susan, this woman out of CPS here in L.A., and I asked her to, like, what are things that people say to you? What are things that, like, that you overhear when you're in some of these meetings? And how much of that can I then either paraphrase or just take, lift directly, and give to authentic, to sort of to make authentic the discussions. And a lot of what Andy Osho's character, the child services woman, says are just things Susan's had to say to real life people, of like, especially when it comes to someone else trying to take custody of a child in an embattled family thing.
Maria spoke about her struggles with mental health. Were you guys nervous to put her in that kind of position where she had to portray maybe something relatively close to a bad episode that she may or may not have gone through?
Well, you know, both Maria and Teresa has a mother who suffered from mental illness, so both of them had very powerful real-life experiences that they were bringing to the role. And obviously, the first thing you think of is the sensitivity of, is this too close to home? And you do everything to make your partners in the movie feel protected and safe, and and they can go there. But actually, both Maria and Teresa are incredibly bold and really wanted to bring truth to these characters' experiences, because so many times you see this in movies, it just just phonus balonus, you know, from the beginning to the end. And
what is that Latin phrase?
Yes, yeah, from my college days. But you know, and they were like, I've never seen, you know, Teresa's the first one who said, I've never seen it in a movie that actually honestly reflects the way my relationship was to my mother, and I really want to do that. And there's that first moment early on where the two of them go at it with one another, and you're like, wow, it's that kind of movie. It's that real. It's this doesn't feel like two people playing dress up. It feels like real people we know.
Yeah, yeah.
One more question.
Oh, well, I do want to thank you guys. The movie's short without all this extra filler that a lot of movies have where you can take 20 minutes out and not miss them. Mm-hmm. Was that something you guys did conscientiously? Or
mm-hmm.
I don't think you could have taken any more. I couldn't have taken any more.
I'm one of the things I love David for was one of the first things he said is like, American movies are too long.
I lit a candle to sleep. No, I did.
You did?
Yeah, and I did. It was scented candles, so I had an excuse, you know.
Uh-huh.
But I did.
What about mixing the balance between fear and strength? Because you look at these characters, and each moment, there's a moment where they're like scared. And then there's a moment where, like, okay, now they have to step up, get into that defense attitude, whether it's Martin, Rebecca, even Sophie. Like, they're all going to challenge what's their fear of.
This is another Waterloo of mine, which is I have not seen enough recently characters in film and TV that have the trait of nobility. And it's something I was itching for. And to see it in a little boy who's suddenly becoming an adult way too soon in order to save his mother. The moments where he stops being scared and he thinks about who he has to save makes him strong. And I want to portray that positive character in him. And of course with Rebecca, who has to go back and revisit something that she doesn't want to see again. When I spoke with Teresa, it was a lot about like Ellen Ripley in Aliens, you know, how she just got out of that hell and now she's going back. But there's a nobility in that because it's, again, to save others. And
that nobility adds to realism, right? What kinds of people survive this kind of harrowing experience? People that have an element of bravery
and strength
to them, not the idiots that sometimes survive.
Otherwise, it'd be like 30 minutes and dying to kill them all.
And the audience cheers. Yay, we wanted those people to die.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, so
much. Thank you.
Thank you
guys. Good job.
Really quick, did James Wan have any influence in the writing phase?
Well, I mean, we had early meetings with James, and he was great because you know it's like the man with the tablets. Yeah, you know,
right. Exactly. Was mentioning the fact that you don't see the killing, but you hear the bone crunch. That was enough.
Yeah,
I say
James's
influence.
James' influence is all over the movie. You know, one of the great things about having a director, an experienced director, as part of the team, is you're already thinking about the shooting of the movie at the very early stages of writing the script.
Sure.
So we were already thinking about the way these scenes are going to be executed, character design, bringing this to life, and that's something that James, like, you know, can't help himself. He's already talking about the marketing of the film in your first story meeting, so very beneficial to have him.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.